you know, we're not going to get through Rashi today. I don't even know what time it is to know how much time we have to start on Rashi. Okay, so yeah, so we got 20 minutes in, and then we'll do Parsha, and then we'll come back to Rashi, I hope, next week. But we said already last week, or to the week before, I remember, Rabbeinu Gershom has Talmidim, and three of his Talmidim are the Rebbeim of Rashi. So we're skipping that generation of the Talmidim. I talked a little bit about them at the time, but we're going to talk about Rashi now. Just by way of some introduction, not that any is needed when you're talking about Rashi, but take a look at source number 4. This is from the Ravan. The Ravan is living in Germany in the middle of the 12th century. So Rashi just is gone by then for about 60 years. But we'll be talking about his biography, but let me flip to get the years from my notes because I don't remember. Yeah, Rashi is born, we think, in the year 1040. Some have 1041. There's even one I saw with 1028, but I think 1040, 1041 is considered generally more accurate. He passes away in the year 1105. So he lives through the First Crusade. That was 1096. So the Ravan, writing in France, you know, not that long after Rashi has passed away, middle of the 12th century, says the following. Divrei tshuvas hago nechochem lemevin v'yesharim liyod eimada. He's quoting a tshuva, responsum of Rashi. And he says, the words of the tshuva of the Gaon, not that Rashi was formerly a Gaon, but he's using the term, are nechochim lemevin. They are there set properly in front of the one who understands. V'yesharim liyod eimada. They are straight for those who have knowledge. V'sivsos of Shamru Das, his lips guard wisdom. V'tora nisbaksha nischadsha v'nidrisha mipiv. And Torah is sought, it is renewed, it is taught from his mouth. Toras emes haisa b'fiyu, he's now borrowing from Malachi. The Torah of truth was in his mouth. B'shalom uv'mishor halach, he walked in peace and righteousness. V'hamid la'olam regel shlishi, he gave the world a third leg to support Torah, the idea being a three-legged table is able to stand. V'higdil Torah v'hedir, he elevated Torah and he made it great.
Such a nice, like, shared up a speech.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? He's full of praise for Rashi, and everybody is full of praise for Rashi. The Rashba, who keep in mind is Sephardi, in the end of the 13th century in Spain, beginning of the 14th, if you take a look at source number 5, he's talking to somebody who thought that the Rashba had made a mistake in something, that the Rashba had missed a certain Gemara in Sanhedrin. So the Rashba writes, Masha amarta shenishmat mimeni hahid arba mizas beis din. When you say that I missed that which is written in this parak in Sanhedrin, v'gam me rabach v'rabbeinu v'rabban shal Yisrael Rashi zal nishmat, you should know that you think Rashi missed it also. And the title that he accords to Rashi is your master, our master, and the master of all Israel. You want to say I forgot something, that's fine, but don't think that Rashi forgot something. The last one that I'm going to bring along the same lines is source number 6. Also in Sfarad, in the 15th century, Rav Avraham Zacuto talks about Rashi as Hama'or HaGadol, a term we use usually for Rabbeinu Gershom, Ma'or HaGola. Hama'or HaGadol, the great luminary, Shepiresh HaTalmud V'kitzvei HaKodesh, he explained the Gemara, he explained Tanakh, Rashi HaTzarfati Parshan Dasa, Rashi of France, Parshan Dasa. Parshan Dasa, you might think, is an odd thing to call him. Who's Parshan Dasa? One of Haman's sons. But Parshan Dat, the explainer of Dat, the religion of Judaism. So he calls him Parshan Dasa. To a certain extent, we get biased regarding Rashi because you learn Rashi as a kid, right? In Chumash, so they tell you the Pasuk says this and Rashi says, and you become so familiar with Rashi, you don't even appreciate just like how necessary he is for everything and the difference between learning Torah before he's done what he's done and learning it afterwards. I mean, I pointed out when we talked about Rabbeinu Gershom, that Rabbeinu Gershom sets the style of writing commentaries on the Gemara with his style of the sort of train of thought, just add a couple of words here, add a couple of words there, that'll explain things. But Rashi is the one whose work shapes our world. Whether that's because Rabbi Gershon's manuscripts are gone, or he didn't write on everything, we don't know. But Rashi is the one who shapes everything. But I do have to tell you one thing that he did not do, which is, and I think I may have mentioned this at some point, Rashi never used Rashi script. Yeah. Rashi never used Rashi script. That's not him. Sorry. So the deal is this. Right. So part of that is because it spread so widely, because everybody was using it. Rashi's grandchildren were the Balei HaTosfos, grandsons were the Balei HaTosfos, and that helps, I think, in that regard. But because it spreads to Ashkenaz, to Sephard, wherever they're burning Torah, they're not burning it everywhere. And therefore, there are copies. Right, there are copies everywhere. But going back to the point about the script, they were already using what are called semi-cursive styles, right? It's not quite script, like when you think of script handwriting in English, but it's called a semi-cursive style. They're using that as early as the 12th century. Rashi could well have used a semi-cursive style when he wrote his manuscripts. There were a lot of them around. I was going to bring you some on the sheet, but I didn't in the end. But the Rambam writes about a script called Hamadavdav. That was what he was talking about using it for a get, potentially. Dagos Mamonios, talks about one called Masheta, which some actually think is the one that Rashi used.
Okay, is there a name for Rashi?
Yeah, right. So he calls one Masheta in 13th century Germany, and I've seen it suggested that that was Rashi's. I brought it on the sheet number 7. We'll see it in a second. The Rashba talks about a script called Mashk. The reason I say, though, that Rashi didn't use Rashi script, per se, is because it seems to be later than Rashi's time that it develops. Based on manuscripts that have been found with it, it's only later that it's in use, and it's likely a Sephardic script.
They were printing already at the time of Rashi?
Like so press? Not no, printing press. Printing press is a couple hundred years later.
So they were copying by hand.
Right. Yes, correct. So printing press is later.
One script, and then the person who copies it over uses his script.
Correct. Absolutely. The script likely got its name from the fact that when they were printing, remember, Hebrew printing in Italy specifically is huge, in Venice in particular, they used it for Rashi's Perushim. When they ended up printing his Perushim, they used that. Or even when people who are still doing it by hand may at some point in certain lands have used it. Why would you use a different typeface? Why would you use a different font?
To differentiation. Yeah.
Why would you want to distinguish?
In case someone thinks that it's
continuation.
Yeah. Right. So one reason to do it was religious reasons. Mm-hmm. To say this isn't.
Right, this is a payroll.
Right. There's a classic, the story they tell with different rabbis, so I'm not even going to guess which rabbi was involved, but some student had written a commentary to Chumash, and he gave it to Rabbi so-and-so to look at, and he asked him for his opinion. So Rabbi looks at it and gives it back to him and says, this is beautiful, this is wonderful, this is amazing. And the student is feeling really good. He says, yeah, I just don't understand. What's all this scribbling that someone did at the bottom?
Oh, God.
Like, he's talking about the top. That's the nice part. But we distinguish between the main part of the text and the part that's not of the same Kedusha. We're using a different script. The Rambam talks about that in that Shuvah that I referenced, where he talks about this Hamadavdav script. He talks about that as something that they would do for something that was less holy. So you wanted to mark it off as being different. You used a different script. That's one reason. The other reason was space reasons, space/time, meaning once you're used to writing Rashi script, and that's not a skill that people really pick up these days. But if you're used to using scripts, not just Rashi's, but all of these semi-cursive ones, you can fit more letters into the space. It's a narrower letter, and you could write it a lot faster. the strokes that you need in order to form, think of like Sefer Torah letters, right? Well, I mean, obviously, no one is writing it like it's Sefer Torah anyway. But and that's what they call it. They call it Otiot Merubaot, square letters. It's a lot harder to write those. It takes more time to write those, and it takes up more space than these. So you're writing, trying to conserve space, you would be more likely to use a semi-cursive thing. So it's entirely possible that Rashi did that.
But in the Makros Megillos, it's only Rashi that's written like that.
So that's because now it's become known as Rashi's script.
So now it's almost like more important.
Yeah, it's become like, okay, this is Rashi's. We're not going to use that for anybody else. But it doesn't make any sense. Also, another interesting thing that comes in with this. Take a look at source number 7. This is from Professor David Ruderman, historian, in an article called From Written to Printed Text. The many uses of these typefaces, he's not just talking about Rashi script, but the various semicursives, are reflected in the terms used to describe these typefaces throughout the centuries. In the 15th century, the typeface which bore striking resemblance to written letters was termed Mashet. After printers started using it for commentaries, it became known as Rashi script. So they named it because that was what it was used for. Then, when the Rashi typeface was adapted to convey Yiddish quotes in the production of Yiddish texts for women, because they didn't learn Hebrew, right? So they were learning Yiddish. It became known as Weibertaich, literally meaning women's Yiddish translation. So Rashi script became what was used for books that were specifically for women. Think Tzenarena, exactly.
Oh my God. So Tzenarena was written in Rashi script?
That's what he's suggesting.
Wow.
Yeah, go figure.
Now we can read it.
Right.
I think we're good.
So, a little bit of biography. Just, I mentioned some of this before, but Rashi, again, is born somewhere around 1040, 1041. The suggestion that he's born in 1028, I think, is interesting because that's when Rabbeinu Gershom passes away. And I wonder if that comes from somebody who wants to say sort of Rabbeinu Gershom dies and Rashi is born, in the same way that in the Gemara we have the idea that some of the Amoraim, when they pass away, the next generation leader is born. He's born in France, right? He's born in Troyes. But he learns in Germany in the yeshivos in Vermeisa and Magenza, Worms and Mainz. The Rebbeim we talked about, Ri Halevi, Rabbeinu Yaakov Ibn Yakar, Rabbi David Halevi. His father was a scholar. Rashi actually quotes him, not where everybody thinks Rashi quotes him. Right? Where does everybody think that Rashi quotes his father? You must have heard this at some point. Okay, so I'm going to tell you in order to say it's not true. The first Rashi on Chumash, right? The classic Rashi where he talks about the Torah not starting with HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem in order to teach Hashem created the world and the chose to give it to us, right? So the beginning of that Rashi is Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So people say, well, Rashi is Rabbi Shlomo ben Yitzchak, so he's quoting his father, which is a really nice idea. But he's quoting a Medrash, which ends up making it into Yalkut Shimoni, and the Medrash is from a Chacham, like you're talking Tanam Ram Oroim, Rabbi Yitzchak. He's not quoting his father. He does quote his father, though, in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, in Hey Amin Aleph, Rashi quotes his father, and there he says it's his father. Side note, the acronym for the Rambam, right, stands for what? Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. The acronym for the Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, right? That's the way it always works. Rabbi so-and-so, son of so-and-so. So why don't you have the Beis in Rashi? No, that's not why. It should be Rashbi. There already was a Rashbi, right? This week we had Lag BaOmer, so I feel like I have to mention that. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is long before. Yeah. Yeah, it's already taken.
He didn't do it. It's
right.
Followed.
Right. I mean, presumably he didn't call himself this. I know people who do that, who come up with their own acronyms. That's not what Rashi would have done. Yeah. Okay.
What year did you say you think he's born and not?
So 1040, 1041, somewhere around there. Rashi is yeshiva trained. Unlike someone like Ibn Ezra, who's roughly contemporary but in Spain, who is also trained scientifically, that's not the education that Rashi is getting. It is very popular to say that Rashi became a vintner, right? Produced wine. It's not as though we know that. You know, the Rashi wines are not from Rashi's vineyards. But what we do know is that in his parish, in his commentary on the Gemara, he makes a lot of references to the technical aspects of wine production, as well as wine sales. And he seems to know an awful lot about it, which could just come, as you said, from living in France. But it makes it seem like he knows what he's doing, and this could have been the business that he engaged in. We know that Rashi has daughters, at least three, possibly a fourth. Know that series of books, Rashi's Daughters, is basically fiction. I gave Shiurim on it when I was in Allentown. I gave Shiurim just like showing all of the different things that are wrong in that.
They say that most of Ashkenaz Jews
it's so bad.
Is like descendants of
Rashi. I was in touch with the writer.
Yeah,
I wrote to her because I was so angry.
Nothing wrong.
And she said,
she said,
I'm not a historian. It's not meant to be history. But if you look at her introduction, it actually says it's based on. Don't get me started.
Don't they say that like most of Jewry today is like from two of Rashi's daughters? Isn't there
so no, what I think you're thinking of, I may have even mentioned it a few weeks ago, is that. Geneticists contend that Ashkenazi Jews can trace their heritage back to four or five women from that time, and since we know that Rashi's from that, so then it's, you can make that leap, but I'm not sure the leap is actually an accurate leap. There's some who challenge that now in terms of the genetics, because this is science and that's the way it works. You say something and somebody else disagrees with you. But Rashi's daughters. His daughter Yocheved, I gave it on the sheet here in number 8, his daughter Yocheved marries Rabbeinu Meir, and they have sons Rashbam, and Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Shmuel ben Meir, and Rabbeinu Yaakov, who is known as Rabbeinu Tam. So they're Rashi's grandsons, and his daughter Miriam marries Rabbeinu Nasan, and they have a son, the Rivan. And all of these, Rabbeinu Meir, Rashbam, Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Nasan, Rivan, these are all Balei HaTosfos, who become hugely important, not just for their commentaries on the Gemara, but as leaders of communities in Ashkenaz. Rabbeinu Tam, I do want to get to talk about in particular, as one of the true architects of Ashkenazi Jewry. Rashi writes on everything. He writes on Tanakh. Not everything that we have that is identified as Rashi on Tanakh is actually Rashi's writing. So, for example, Rashi on Divrei Hayamim is not Rashi. It's probably from a student of Rashi's yeshiva, and therefore it ended up being called that.
Not one of his grandchildren.
I don't know whether it would have been one of the grandchildren. It's an interesting suggestion, but we don't know. But what we do know is that because there are things in the Perushim that specifically contradict things that Rashi writes elsewhere. And sometimes you can even see a quote from something that was actually after Rashi. Like, you know, it's not Rashi. It's just not. Yeah. I chalk it up to also calling it Rashi script. Yeah.
Right.
It was published under Rashi's name. It was published as Rashi at some point, so we're just going to keep calling it that. But no, Rashi and Debrayamim is not Rashi. Does that mean he didn't write on it, or that we lost it?
Only Debrayamim?
No. So Debrayamim is the one that comes to mind. I didn't write about this in my notes. I was just remembering it as we were talking about what Rashi wrote. There are random comments that make it into what we know is Rashi, but like here and there that were stuck in by a typesetter at some point or a student at some point. But that's the only one that I can think of offhand where the entire book is actually not Rashi. On the Gemara, we know that on a couple of Masechtos, it's not Rashi. And unclear whether that is because whether that's because Rashi didn't write on it or because we lost it. So, for example, on Bava Basra and on Psachim, there are places where it's Rashbam that we have instead of Rashi.
But we know it is.
But we know that. No, the standard issue Gemara says Rashbam, and the style is wildly different. Rashi is, a couple of words here, a couple of words there, occasionally a couple of lines. Rashbam writes like one of the authors of the Tosfos. He fills up the page. when in Daf Yomi they get to those Mesechtos, like suddenly the Daf is much shorter.
Really? Because on Chumash he writes like two words.
Yeah, no, that, no, Rashbam, you're saying. Yeah, Rashbam's style, because Rashbam's style on Chumash is a Pshat style. His style on Gemara is very much a Tosvos style of dealing with the fact that here the Gemara says this and there the Gemara says that. He's incorporating that as he goes. He has a very different style on Gemara than he does on Chumash. It's true.
Like talking very little.
It's very funny, yeah. In Nedarim, so we have the Ran. Rabbi Nunisim, instead of Rashi, who does the same thing to the Daf. Suddenly the Daf becomes really, really short. And then on Sota and Nazir, it is believed that it's not Rashi. One of them, I think, is the Ravan. Ravan or the Rivan. Maybe it's the Rivan, his grandson. But yeah, it's not Rashi. So there are Mesechtos where what we're working with isn't Rashi.
Does everybody who comments after Rashi deal with Rashi, or they sometimes, like on the Gemara, they just ignore him?
So everybody's got to deal with Rashi one way or the other. Whether you're Ashkenaz or Sfarad or whatever it is, he is Rabban Shokol Yisrael. I was reading last week, who was this?
Rashi Rabban Shokol Yisrael.
Yes, that is another way to read the acronym. But I was reading somebody last week, somebody knowledgeable. Oh, Zimmels. Professor Rabbi Doctor Zimmels. He argued that in Sfard initially Rashi wasn't given his due, like in the first generation or two, but that afterwards it was when it really developed. I don't know. He's a historian, but I don't know. Okay, so let's do Parsha.
Just one last question. So on the Gemara that Rashi's not part of.
Yeah.
Does everybody deal with his grandchildren as a replacement, or it's not the same effect?
It's definitely not the same effect. Just because you get the spot on the inside margin of the page doesn't mean that you're Rashi.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's true. But on the other hand, you got there for a reason. You know, it's not nothing that your parish is in that spot. I will mention, I was going to say it before, I should write more in the notes. In the Kinos for Tisha B'Av, Rav Soloveitchik always used to comment. There's a line in the Kinos when it talks about the destruction of Sfarim, by the church. Miyarich Niziros umiyafli Nedarim. What are we now going to have? I think the line is miyafli Niziros umiyarich Nedarim. That's the way the line should go. Literally, who will make Niziros clear? Who will evaluate Nedarim? The line has multiple layers of meaning. There's a Gemara that talks about how when a person takes a neder, a vow to be a nazir, they have to be mafli. They have to say it explicitly, clearly. And the word specifically is yafli. That's the Torah's word. Ish ki yafli lindor neder nazir. Erech is a term that's used specifically for evaluating nedarim, vows. So the line is, who can explain, who can make clear nazir, who can clarify nedarim? However, as Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, we don't have Rashi on those Mesechtos. And maybe it's because when they burned the manuscripts, that had Rashi, and that's why we don't have it. So the Kina is saying, we no longer have Rashi now because of this, and who can explain these Mesechtos to us the way that Rashi would have. Okay.